This recording is a production of Conservative Anabaptist School Board Institute. This presentation was recorded at Conservative Anabaptist School Board Institute 2015 in Wytheville, Virginia, March 6th through 7th.
Well, I'm not from Alabama, but I don't know if Georgia's going to be any better. Y'all understand me okay? Okay, well, we're in Virginia, so it should be okay. I wonder how many of you would call English your favorite subject when you were in school. Anybody, how many here would say English or related subject was favorite when you were in school? Okay, some. How many of you would say it was your worst subject in school? Oh, a lot more hands. And I hear that pretty frequently. People, when I talk about English, people will comment on awful it was, or it was not, that they did not enjoy it in school. And like to think about some of the reasons why I believe it is important, and maybe we'll raise the question at least of why is it that there seems to be a disconnect between the importance of it and I think the widespread recognition of the importance of it, and yet the lack of enjoyment that is that many express. Well, I feel like I could probably answer the question, why teach English, by simply reading stories for the entire time. And maybe in an indirect way provide, it would justify the reason for teaching about the subject, but I'm not going to do that, but I do have one short story I'd like to read to begin. It's called The Old Grandfather and His Little Grandson, and this is told by Leo Tolstoy. The grandfather had become very old. His legs would not carry him. His eyes could not see. His ears could not hear. And he was toothless. When he ate, bits of food sometimes dropped out of his mouth. His son and his son's wife no longer allowed him to eat with them at the table. He had to eat his meals in the corner of the stove. One day they gave him his food in a bowl. He tried to move the bowl closer. It fell to the floor and broke. His daughter-in-law scolded him. She told him that he spoiled everything in the house and broke their dishes, and she said that from now on he would get his food in a wooden dish. The old man sighed and said nothing. A few days later, the old man's son and his wife were sitting in their hut, resting and watching the little boy playing on the floor. They saw him putting together something out of small pieces of wood. His father asked him, "What are you making, Misha?" The little grandson said, "I'm making a wooden bucket. When you and Mama get old, I will feed you out of this wooden dish." The young peasant and his wife looked at each other, and tears filled their eyes. They were ashamed because they had treated the old grandfather so meanly, and from that day, they again let the old man eat with them at the table and took better care of him. We're not going to stop and discuss the story, all the themes and meanings of the story. Simply wanted to illustrate the significance of language in our lives. Believe that language plays a primary and essential role in our lives and in our relationships. And in turn, these relationships play a central role in the project of God's kingdom. Language is a gift from God. He is the fountainhead of language. And he is the ultimate communicator. He created the world with his words. He revealed his will, his plan to us in words, and ultimately, and most fully, in the living word, Jesus Christ. And we're created in God's image, and we bear this faculty, this capacity for language. And as his image bearers, we have the unique privilege and responsibility to cultivate this gift wisely and to use it wisely. So that's what we want to think about here today, is how our schools can do that, at least to an extent, cultivate the gift of language in our students. Well, what is English when in the context of school? Perhaps we do just as well to call the subject communications. That would keep us focused on the objective of English. English as an academic subject from a Christian perspective, I believe, is developing communication skills for God's glory. More specifically, English is training students in the skills of listening and reading with comprehension and speaking and writing with clarity. As human beings, we both receive language, we're receivers of language, and we're transmitters of language. And English class is concerned with both arenas of language, developing the skills of receiving, listening and reading primarily, and also transmitting, speaking and writing language. And the typical components that we have in our schools in the area of English would be reading, writing, penmanship, grammar, spelling and vocabulary, and speaking. I want to spend a lot of my time focusing on what should we accomplish? What do we want to accomplish in our English classes? I believe that language and language class, English class, is closely tied, or let me say it this way, that our ability to conceptualize and grasp what's real and true is closely tied to our ability to use language. Vocabulary opens our eyes to new realities. It's difficult for us to grasp something that we don't have words for. And so it takes words, it takes language, knowing how words work together, to be able to conceptualize and grasp those concepts. And otherwise, we're closed off from those parts of reality. We don't have the language in which to put it into words somehow. Then it's not a clear idea or a concept for us. You probably experienced relating to someone that speaks a different language, or perhaps you speak more than one language and experience what it's like for that person to try to express some concept that they have a word for in one language, but in which they do not have a word for in another language. An exact counterpart. I think probably most languages have those unique vocabulary or phrases that other languages don't match exactly. And if our language doesn't have that concept, a word or a phrase for it, then sometimes it's hard for us to completely or to understand it in the same way. This shows the importance of language. If we don't develop in our students the vocabulary and simply the literacy to understand language well, then it's going to handicap them in accessing certain truths and values, I believe. This is an illustration to illustrate this concept. If I were to ask you what colors you see on the spectrum, you would give me your answers in terms of the vocabulary that English has. you would see the colors. You see the colors for which English has words. And I've, in doing some research and reading, I've just run across or realized that in some languages, the words, they divide up the spectrum at different places. They don't necessarily see red, orange, yellow, and so on exactly the same way we do, because they have slightly different words, different categories, and so it actually affects the way they see the reality of this. Russian, for instance, divides up what we would call blue into two different colors. I've got a little graphic of that. Here's all the Russian, it's supposed to be the Russian words for the various colors that they, common colors that they have. And they're showing this color as being a completely different color than this color. Because, well, whereas we would consider them both variations of blue. Simply an illustration for the way that I think the critical role that language plays in connecting or in our ability to grasp ideas. And I want my students to be as capable as possible, as prepared as possible to grasp the complex realities of life and the complex ideas of life and to be able to see them clearly. The greatest of these complex realities is God Himself. And so the more vocabulary, the greater literacy our students possess, the greater facility they have in handling language and understanding language, I think it does do things to open up their, to open up the world to them. A related idea is that expressing language does something, the very act of expressing language does something to our understanding. And this is a quote from a man named Edward Young, 1742, comes out of a poem that he wrote in which he made this statement that thoughts disentangle passing o'er the lip. The idea that when a person expresses an idea, puts it into words, wrestles it into a sentence or a paragraph, that it brings clarity to their understanding. And then with clarity and with understanding comes a greater probability of a student accepting, internalizing, and owning that idea. I think that it's important to give our students the ability to express themselves, because by doing that, it helps to clarify ideas for them, beliefs. And it's also important to give students frequently the opportunity and require them to express ideas, to express what they're learning, because probably the learning isn't complete until they can actually express it. We can teach a concept very well to our students, and that teachers can put it before them, and students can accept it, and they think they understand it, but to really know whether they understand it, they need to actually express it themselves. They need to say it in writing or in speaking, and by virtue of that act of expressing it, it clarifies the understanding in their own mind and increases their, sort of helps them to own that idea, is at least my belief and theory. So to summarize, articulating beliefs and values brings clarity and understanding, and then that with that clarity comes an internalization and a greater probability that a student will embrace the thing which they are expressing. And I think this is especially important in terms of theological truths and truths about the Christian worldview, when a student can speak those things for himself or herself, that it helps them embrace those ideas. It's sort of a cycle that feeds itself. You need vocabulary to get the idea to begin with, but then expressing it helps clarify it and helps the student to own it. So basically what we're saying here is that, why do we teach English? Well, we teach literacy so that students can understand the world, and so that they can think more clearly about the world, think more truly about the world. Another part of communication is obviously being a careful listener. We want to teach our students to be careful listeners so that they can receive ideas and process them. And I'm not really going to say anything more about this particular skill. I just wanted to mention that, acknowledge this is part of the process. Now I want to spend some time on reading and the importance of reading. Why do we teach English? Well, obviously so students can read. And I want to go over some of the benefits of reading. And this goes without saying, but I just want to list them and kind of pull together some of the main reasons or benefits for reading. It's important that our students are able to understand and interpret the Bible. This was one of the big pushes for educating students to read came out of the Reformation, and this idea that we want people to be able to read the scriptures for themselves. And while we as Anabaptist don't want to see that as being a completely individual project, people still need to read for that reason, and to read well. It's true that God rewards the sincere seeker, the sincere reader. But he can also use language ability in order to... A person that reads well gets more out of the scripture than someone who doesn't read well. Another benefit of reading is personal growth and education. The person that reads has a vast universe of information and knowledge that's available to them, in which they can learn about through books and magazines and other reading material. Tremendous source of personal growth and education. We need to teach our students to read so they can follow directions and figure things out on their own. They're not going to go through life with a teacher there beside them, showing them how to do everything. They need to be able to read directions and follow directions. So everything from 1040 tax forms to computer manuals or anything else they run across in life. It's following directions isn't just something everybody can do. It takes literacy to be able to understand directions. I think we should read good literature and teach our students to read good literature because of the life wisdom that can be gleaned and gained through observing the different experiences that people have in life. Much of the wisdom that we gather in life comes from things that we experience or observe other people experiencing around us. And literature, reading stories about people, novels and biographies and all kinds of literature, gives us a wider range of experiences which we can observe. We're not limited to our own lives or the lives of our family, but we can observe many people and the lives and things that they experience, and learn from that. Training our students to read, be good readers, makes accurate communication possible through written correspondence. This is beneficial personally for people. It's also beneficial in business and church, where letters are exchanged, emails, and someone who reads well will understand those at a deeper level than those who have a lower level of reading ability. Reading also is good for our minds. Keeps the Alzheimer's away. It helps with keeping our minds sharp, exercising our minds. It helps to develop higher thinking levels, higher level thinking skills like analyzing, summarizing, and some of those skills. When we read, when we teach our students to read, it develops an attention span, because you put your attention on one spot, and it's a sustained focus for over a period of time. And I think that that's especially helpful it's always been helpful. It's maybe especially needful in a society where digital media doesn't cause that to have that same kind of sustained attention as much. Digital media often tends to be broken up and more fast-paced, and where our attention is moving around rapidly from one thing to another. But reading causes us to develop a longer attention span and cultivates that in our children, I believe. There's a lot of personal enjoyment and recreation that can come through reading as well. And some people find, for various reasons, find reading difficult. And that's, I don't want people to feel bad about that. Sometimes they've lacked the education, they haven't had the opportunities to learn. Maybe there's other obstacles, difficulties stand between them and being able to read and enjoy reading. But if we can help our students to become good readers and love reading, then we open up a lot of possibilities for recreation in this area and personal enjoyment, along with all these other things. I want to go through and just mention a few different kinds of reading that we can bring into our school, I believe are good to have in our school and have our students doing. Biographies. So many men and women who have come before us who exhibit honorable qualities, exemplary qualities, and to put those before our students and have them read about them is inspiring. And we should be doing that. History, all kinds of history. There's so much available in this area, and I think that's one category we should make available to our students. The classics. A question here would be, how much should we as Anabaptists accept the standard, the word is canon, of classics that are our Western civilization has put in place? Should we accept that? Should we develop our own alternative canon? These are the classics. These are the books that everybody has stood the test of time. Everybody should read. Do we need a mix? That's a question that we face in school, because we question, what do we point our students toward? What do we have them do book reports on? Do we go with the standard canon, or how do we look at that? And I suppose we'd have some different opinions among us on this. This would be my thought, that I would suggest that we learn to read as Anabaptists, not that we read merely Anabaptists. That we would modify and supplement the canon that exists, and not simply try to replace it. My own experience here is that there is some value in the Shakespeare and in the Charles Dickens and in the T.S. Eliot, but I don't think we should adopt that canon uncritically and wholeheartedly everything. But I believe that it's better to be able to read critically than to never be exposed to non-Anabaptist values. So maybe you'll have some feedback on that later. You're welcome to talk about that. Maybe it's something that somebody on the panel would want to address tomorrow, but I don't feel like that it's my goal for my students or even my children to simply read that all of their literature is coming right out of an Anabaptist world or Anabaptist culture. I want them to learn to read other literature critically as Anabaptists, filter it, and adapt and accept what's good, but still solidly believe what they've been taught. Okay, I don't think I'm expressing that very well. Must not have the right vocabulary. But hopefully you understand what I'm saying. And obviously you have to take into consideration how old a child is, what they're ready for and what they're not ready for. But I think we do need to learn, teach our students to be, to analyze and filter what they read, no matter what the source is. Poetry helps children learn about the more figurative aspects of language. There should be some poetry in our schools. There's also a lot of Anabaptist stories that I think we should be putting before our students and help perform them. And there's a slide with just a few examples of Anabaptist stories that our students can read. Well, what makes a book a good book? I just have a few ideas about what qualifies as good literature. Good books cause the reader to admire characters who are good and noble, I believe. Good books disillusion the reader to the attractiveness of sin. Satan and his forces try to make sin attractive, give it an allure. Well, good literature will dispel that notion, will help us to see that that's not true, disillusion us to that lie. If we see, there's a play by the title of The Death of a Salesman, not written by a Christian, and yet it does this. I remember reading it and seeing with greater clarity the awfulness, the awful consequences of sin. Good literature stirs one's, a good book stirs one's faith. Remember reading an autobiography of George Mueller and being inspired by that. Give your students Brutschko to read, or John Coblentz's biography of his father, or Vera's Journey. Books that hold up people who have been faithful and who have done great things for God, and they will stir our faith. Good literature will also increase our empathy our ability to feel deeply along with other people. As we read stories where people experience difficult things, go through hardships. Maybe the story of a slave in the South, or a sharecropping family in the early 1900s. We learn to empathize and to feel other people's pain. Good literature will give us experiences different from our own. And I think this is very valuable. I remember reading a book called The Spirit Catches You. It was about a Hmong family that moved from Vietnam and immigrated to California. It had a child with some sort of had a problem with seizures. And the clash that occurred between them and the medical field here in the United States, because their perspective of what was going on and what needed to happen was completely different from what the medical community said what needed to happen. And so those things are good for us, because it stretches our horizons and gives us experiences that are different. Certainly there are some literature that should be avoided as well. And I have just a couple of ideas about what we should avoid in literature. Literature that shows sin in some kind of positive light, where somebody rebels against the rules of God and things still turn out wonderfully for them. Okay, that's not a picture of reality, and that's not what we want. Readers shouldn't be led or enticed to vicariously experience sinful attitudes or actions in the books that we allow them to read. There's also this thing that I call marshmallow literature, what I mean by this is that books which pretend that evil doesn't even exist. And I don't know, this might end up with more of this in our schools than the first. I think there's a danger in having literature that doesn't portray the world realistically. Well, if everything is just kind of nice and fuzzy and doesn't actually take evil seriously, I believe it can create false expectations for life. Okay, writing. I believe that reading is probably one of the most important skills that we have to teach in English. Writing is certainly another one. I'd like to share some reasons that I believe we should teach writing, and that it's important. A writing cultivates an attention to detail and accuracy. When you're writing and you put a word down, well, we often stop and scrutinize it. Okay, no, that's actually not the right word. We mark it out and try something different. And might write a sentence and then have to realize that really doesn't do a very good job of, I've got to get it right, because once I have it written down, it's here. And so it creates this attention to detail and accuracy that we tend not to cultivate in our speaking. Writing is essential to the official business of any organization. At least as far as I can tell, from what I've seen, whether it's church, business, school, or any kind of legal interaction, government documents, writing is one of the methods of communication, also methods of record keeping. And so to be able to do that well is a great bonus. It's very helpful. Writing can reach a wider audience than other forms of communication. You write something down, it can be shared very widely, both immediately and in the future. Now, I do acknowledge that at this point in time, audio and video can also be saved and shared. But I still think that writing is given a sort of primacy, or there's still more things in place at this point in history to share writing than some of these other forms, it seems. And writing is also a valuable means of educating, encouraging, inspiring other people. There is a seemed to be a dearth of writers in Anabaptist circles. And if going back to the paper that was handed out from Daryl Hirschberger, if he can claim 25% of our graduates for hymn composers, I'd like to claim another 25% for writers, at least. There's different kinds of writing that had a few ideas about things we should include in our schools. I'm going to just flip through these because I feel like I'm running a little short on time. But all these are all different kinds of writing that I think will develop different kinds of thinking and skills in our students that we should have them work on. Speaking is another skill that I think fits under the category of English and we should be teaching our students. Here are some kinds of speaking we can have them do. We can just simply have them tell stories, develop storytelling. A demonstration speech is where they'll do a how-to. Here's a method, a process that they're going to teach somebody how to do something. An informative speech simply has the mission to inform. And then there's a persuasive speech where you want to, where the student tries to change a person's ideas, beliefs, or their behavior in some area. Another word for informative speech would be, we have those all the time in our churches, topics. The informative speeches, generally, some sermons are informative speeches. Some would be persuasive speeches, or a mixture of both. You can teach our students about devotionals and give them opportunities to give devotionals at school, especially in the upper levels. Have your guys, have the upper level guys in your school give devotionals and be involved. Contribute publicly as much as possible. And then debates is another form of public speaking that I think has value for students to be able to learn how to develop reasons and supporting evidence for a certain position, and then to argue for that and defend it against an opposing position. And how they go about this is important from my perspective. I want my students to be able to disagree with each other calmly and respectfully, and to be able to challenge somebody else's idea without challenging the person and without feeling any strain in the relationship with that person. And I wrote in my notes, would that all men's meetings would be conducted in the same way. But if our students can learn to debate well, think and to argue for something that they believe is true, and to articulate that, and yet also be at the same time careful to listen to other people, which is part of debating, and do that in a way that doesn't create any kind of strife, or ill will or ill bad feelings, then that's a valuable a skill for a student to have going through life. Ultimately, all of these skills, whether it's thinking, reading, speaking, writing, are for the purpose of enabling our students to seek God's kingdom, to be better lovers and followers of God, to be better husbands or wives, fathers and mothers, to be better church builders. There's many, many arenas in the church which communication skills are important and can be a blessing to the church. It's one of my visions that gives me energy for teaching English, is to see that translate into stronger churches. And outreach and witnessing, there's opportunities to use language. And language is, skill in using language is essential. Teaching English as a second language is a wide open door from what I hear. All across Asia and other parts of the world, they're looking for people to come and teach English. And if we can do a good job of teaching English to our students, then it opens up or gives them the tools they need to go into those situations and take advantage of that opportunity. Also within the church, there's lots of committee work to be done. Whether it's school boards or mission committees or any of the other hundreds of committees that we end up having, it helps when the minutes are well constructed out of those things, and when the letters that are sent out, notification letters, use good grammar and have good English in them. So it's not just, and it seems like everybody in church gets involved with those committees, and so I think everybody can use these skills. Just a couple words about method. Our question wasn't how do we teach English, it was why do we teach English. And yet just a couple of things to say about the how that's related to the why. I think it's in relation to developing good readers in our schools and simply people who understand language well and use language well. I think it's important that they get an early start in language. So if there are ways that we can encourage parents in our communities to read to their children, then that primes the pump. It develops some very basic skills early on that enable them to develop higher skills later. Children have, at the age of, from one up, two, three, and four, and five especially, have a tremendous capacity for language, to learn language. And I think for a mom who sits down every day with a preschool child and reads a story with them, does that child a tremendous service in helping them be prepared to learn language well later on. I also want to say that good grammar does matter. Good grammar facilitates clear communication, whereas grammatical errors create obstacles in communication. And I said, this is a quote, bad grammar is like bad breath. You may still be able to get your point across, but it might be less well received. So I hope we can create a culture in our schools where redneck speak isn't the cool or the manly thing, but rather where good grammar is appreciated. I do think that perhaps our curriculum traditionally I don't feel like I'm know enough to say this with certainty, but perhaps our curriculum traditionally has been imbalanced in its focus on spelling and grammar. Now, this said, good grammar is important, but some curriculums will spend year after year after year after year just doing grammar, more grammar. And that's a verb, and that's a noun, and that's a preposition, and it's diagrammed this way. And not enough attention is paid to applying that grammar in writing and speaking. I've also seen curriculum where third and fourth graders are spending more time learning spelling words than anything else that they're learning. Twice as much time learning or studying spelling words than any other subject that they have in school. And I'll Jonas, you correct me if I'm wrong, but that seems a little imbalanced to me. It seems like it's a little too, it's good, but it's too much. It's out of proportion to the rest of what we're focusing on. It's kind of like we can spend so much time wandering around the construction site, stacking up the lumber, that we never get anything built. It's kind of what it feels like. And I'll put a plug in for teaching literature. I found that literature is a wonderful way to gain insight into the experiences of other people and to discuss all kinds of ideas and values. You can read a story and students enjoy the stories and then talk about why did these characters act like that? What was going on? And what happened as a result of these decisions? And you can just, there's no end to the possibilities of what you can discuss coming out of the story. But it seems to me that we as Anabaptists have tended to somewhat minimize the importance of written and spoken language. That we put more emphasis on the doing. Make sure you live right. Make sure you walk your talk. And emphasize that to the extent that we haven't emphasized as much working at talking and writing out our ideas. And so as a result, we've borrowed a lot of talk from the Max Lucados, the Joyce Meyers, the Donald Millers, in our world, and we can learn things from them. And I wouldn't really want to upend the doing over talking. I think that's the right order, but I do think that the talking will be an asset to learn to express who we are, what we value, and what we believe is true. Learning to express that well will be a benefit to our communities, I believe. Thank you.
This recording and many others are available from Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders Educational Programs. Order online at www.christianlearning.org or call 877-222-4769.